My name is Mikey, I'm an addict.
Oh my God, sorry.
That's okay. This is, okay, cool. So yeah, I was just thinking before I started, shit, what's my message gonna be? Like, what do I have to offer? What do I have to say? Obviously the answer was nothing to all of those things. And then this word, like, simple, came into my mind. And when I think about my recovery, this has been maybe the simplest thing I've ever done, and the thing that's brought about kind of the most profound changes in my life. So I guess I'll begin from when I was like a kid. I started drinking when I was 12 in a seaside village in another country where I was raised. And like, alcoholism was kind of in my family from an early age. My dad's dad was an alcoholic. My parents were highly functioning, very successful alcoholics. And that was kind of the precedent for my childhood. You know, they were never really around. They were incredible providers. And I saw stuff that I probably shouldn't have seen as a kid, like my parents being wasted, like really, really out of control drunk. And I didn't realize that it may have affected me until obviously I was able to make choices for myself and they were bad. So I picked up my first drink when I was 12, and it was never like, I'm just gonna have a drink. It was like, I'm gonna blackout drink all the time. And all the kids were doing it. And then by 14, 15, I'd been like kicked out of school. When I was working for my mum and dad, they have a business, and I was just drinking all the time. And then drugs happened when I was 14, and it just got progressively worse. It was like, you know, small time stuff. And then by the age of about 15, 16, I realized that it wasn't the drugs, it was the place that I lived. That was the problem. My mum and dad were the problem. So I had to leave. And so I really worked towards leaving home, and I managed to save some money and move back to Liverpool when I was 17 by myself. And that was just like amazing. As soon as I got there, I fell into a crowd of people who loved cocaine. And that was it. I was like 17, bang on it. I managed to be highly functioning like my mum and dad, so I put myself through college. I got my high school diploma. I then set my mind to not just, you know, doing well, getting by. I had to be an extreme. I had to go to like the best school for what I wanted to do in the world. And I did. All whilst getting really fucked up every single day, pretty much. But I guess throughout all of that was this avoidant response to just my reality, to who I actually was. You know, I built up all of these ideas and these expectations of the person that I thought I should be to further enable my using, to further justify my behavior. Because that's the behavior that I witnessed from my mum and dad. You know, they were very successful people. They made a lot of money and they drank a lot. So for me, it was like, okay, well, how can I justify this destructive streak in me? Well, I need to overcompensate in other areas of my life. But with that becomes so much kind of like deceit and dishonesty, and that kind of stuff really started to eat away at me. I'm a very sensitive person. And then by the age of 19, I left Liverpool. I moved down here to go to that school. And I'd got this really close friend who I'd lived with for a long time. And one thing that sticks in my mind is, as soon as I got to London, it was like the next level, if there was one. I got home one morning at like 8 a.m. as he was leaving for work. And this is maybe was like the fourth or fifth week of us living together in London. And he was like, you're a gateway drug user. Like, you're going to end up dead. Like, and I was like, fuck off. I'm like 19. I'm amazing. I'm loving my life. And shortly after that, he left. He was like, I can't live with you anymore. You're out of control. And obviously, it was him. It wasn't me. And I felt like I lost a brother, you know, we were really good friends. And the consequence of my using was never really apparent until I like finished school, finished college, and then had to support myself and be an adult, be responsible, and I just wasn't. By that point, I had a relationship with someone who really helped me calm down, as in I just took ketamine and Valium for 2 years. Which was my idea of, you know, calming down. And it worked for a while. I was so fucked up that he couldn't realize how awful I was. So he stuck around for 2 years. And then he left me, obviously. And things got worse after that. Things got really bad. I had started to take harder drugs. I went back on the uppers after that ended. And I kind of scraped my way through life. You know, I had like small successes in what I chose to do. But it was never really genuine. Like, so even when I'd done well or felt like I'd done well, I knew that it was all based on just like lies and dishonesty and manipulation, because I was very good at those things. And I'd enmeshed so many aspects of my life in this behavior that I thought that's who I was. And I really hated that person, so it allowed me to use even more, because I really didn't want to be the person that I was. And drugs and alcohol made me more into that person, and the only way to get out of that was to take more drugs and alcohol. And so that was my cycle for a long time, and towards the end it was pretty chaotic. I'd go through periods of being sober by myself for 3 weeks, because I'd save up for that 1 weekend a month. And that 1 weekend a month was just like, I would take more drugs than I had taken in a whole month every day in those 2 or 3 days, 4 days, 5 days. And I started to put myself in situations that I wasn't really equipped to be in. Like I said, I'm really sensitive, so I kind of fell into this dark kind of world of drugs and sex in London. And as a young gay man, it wasn't a really good place to be. And I started to really externalize all of my self-worth and just objectify myself on such a level that the way that I interacted with people was such extreme ways that I had no boundaries, I had no idea of reality, and it was really evident. Like, a lot of my friends had turned their back on me. My relationship with my family was just non-existent. You know, I barely spoke to them only when I wanted money. And because that's always been the solution, my mum and dad would send it every time, even though they knew what I was doing with it. And I got into this place where I put myself in these situations so many times, and then I'd been lucky, I suppose, and then this one time I wasn't. It kind of all caught up with me. And that was the second to last time that I used. And I was found in the street at 2 in the morning in Wandsworth. I'd been drugged and raped by 3 men, and they left me to die. And I was hypothermic, and I had no clothes on, no phone, no wallet, no keys. And the one thing that sticks out to me more than anything in that moment was when the police found me, and they asked me who I was, and I didn't know. I just didn't know. I couldn't physically, I had disassociated on such a level that I just had no idea who I was. I was just this empty shell of this person. And it was such a traumatic experience for me. I was in St. Thomas's for 2 days, and I remember in the morning after I was taken in, this doctor came up to my bed, and she, you know, they all like, do you mind if a few students sit in on this? And I was just like, sure. And there was like 20, there was like 20. And it was really painful. She sat on the end of the bed and she said, why do you think this happened to you? And I just looked at her and I couldn't stop crying. And I said, I obviously don't like myself that much. And that was it. I left St. Thomas's. I had to break into my flat. And I looked in the mirror and I promised myself that I would never, ever let that happen to me again. I had kind of played with the idea of recovery a handful of times from when I was 19 until 24 when this happened. And I'd never really got it. I would come to a meeting, I would judge everyone and leave, take more drugs. And I got so desperate that the following week, I ended up going out with my friends and taking drugs and drinking again. And it was a safe environment, like, I was with friends, but the feelings that it made me feel when I took drugs and drank again, it brought everything back up what had happened the week previously. And so I promised myself that that was the last time I would use drugs and drink. And then I got myself along to a meeting the next day, and it's been 20 months now.
Oh, wow.
I turned 26 last week, and I came away from spending the weekend with my parents. My mum baked me a cake. She never did that, not once, my whole life. me and that he's proud of me, what I've done with my life. And the only way that I've gotten to that point is by keeping this program as simple as possible. You know, when I first came in, I didn't think, I'm going to get to 1 year, I'm going to get to 18 months, I'm going to get to 2 years. I just thought, I'm fucking desperate. I'll do whatever I need to do today to not go back to that place that brought me in here. I complicated my recovery early on by getting into a relationship with someone who was 2.5 years clean. Obviously, he relapsed, and I'm still here, but that was so painful. And I identified that that was just me trying to find someone who was going to fix me. And I'm really grateful that that happened in my first 4 or 5 months because it enabled me to realize happiness is an inside job. It starts with me. No one's going to fix me. Only I can fix me. And I'm not broken. So I do service today. I work the steps. I have an incredible sponsor who's been with me every step of the way from day one. I'm a human being, I still make mistakes, but when I think about all the things this program has given me in terms of a new career, a new life, the fact that I'm able to look in the mirror today and allow myself to really be seen, to be vulnerable for the person that I am, for the sensitive boy that made a lot of mistakes, but the best decision I ever made was coming into this program and doing this work. I'm able to connect with people today in an honest way. I can look people in the eye and not be ashamed. And I did a lot of shameful stuff when I was using. When I think about the gifts of recovery and when I think about what it all boils down to, and I've often wanted to leave the program, like I think it happens to all of us, but I always remind myself that this is like a selfless program. And I came in here unable to relate, unable to connect, unable to really talk to anyone. And then I met people who understood me and kind of loved me back to a place where I was able to believe that I was able to be loved again. And then I was able to give myself that love. And there's going to be people who come into this program who need the same. And I always remind myself of that. You know, why am I doing this work? Why am I picking myself apart? And the reason I'm doing it is so that one day I can give back. Because I spent a decade in active addiction, being so self-centered, so full of fear. The last thing I would have ever wanted to do was help someone just because I can. So what I always remind myself of is that my sponsor had no agenda, she had no reason to want to help me. I just asked. And I think that's the biggest gift this program has given me, is I'm still able to ask for help. Sometimes on a daily basis, you know, I pray. I have faith now. I don't know who I pray to. I don't think it's God per se, but I have a concept of a higher power. And I do truly believe that if I hadn't found this program, I'd be dead. I did die that night. A part of me died that night. A part of me that needed to die. And I spent 10 years tearing myself apart, but this program is teaching me every day how to fix those pieces. I had a chat with someone recently, and she spoke about this Japanese culture where when something ceramic, like a vase or something breaks, they put it together with gold thread, and they allow all of the cracks to be seen, all of the broken bits, and they turn it into something beautiful. And I think this program has taught me to do that. Thank you.